Like,
do we have to turn it around when we talk?
No, just speak loud enough so that it'll pick it up.
They'll hear it too. I mean, they're good.
Yeah,
can y'all hear us? No sign language.
And we'll just keep all time.
I also translate in Vietnamese.
Get out of here.
Oh, good.
All right, so we're ready?
Yes.
All right. Okay. Let me see here. I call to order the workshop of the Planning and Zoning Commission for April 13th, 2022. We're starting this at 5:38 p.m.
We only have one item on the agenda, and that's to discuss the Mobility 2030.
Okay.
And so this is very informal. It is just a workshop. I just need you to open it.
Okay.
And we will have to take a roll call, so Courtney, if you don't mind, we'll just have her document who is here. It looks like everybody's here. Right? Nine.
Now we have one. We have one alternate now or two?
Two.
Okay.
Two.
All right.
Who am I missing? Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Sorry. This is, if y'all were here last night, the building did get hit and we fried everything. And so we have no speaker system right now. And obviously our computer is acting a little funny. We're very fortunate because next door they've lost all power and everything was fried. So at least we're able to hold this meeting.
And you didn't miss a beat the whole night. Just yeah. Kept going for it. I was like,
yeah, yep. You were great last night.
Thank you. Appreciate that. So this workshop, we haven't been able to meet to really discuss it because our meetings have been so long. So we broke it out. And what we wanted to do was focus on the definitions of our roadways and what we want those roadways to look like, and possibly also start looking at our map system. Are there arterial roads or roads that are acting as collectors that aren't identified as collectors? Are there areas where we need improvements, where we, or you all as a body, have seen or heard complaints, this road needs to be wider, this road needs something different. It could even be something as simple as this road needs a hike and bike lane or a bicycle lane to go on it, and some of the non-TxDOT roads. And so that's what we're doing. You all asked us to compare the definitions between the different entities. And so Yvonne did pull together some items that were provided for you in your packet, and we're going to go over some of the local entities, what they do, and we're going to kind of tag team this. What I'd like to do is kind of show you what the differences are, and then we can go back and talk about them. We can talk about them in groups. It's really informal for this type of process.
You didn't want to do a roll call then, right?
No, no. So we just documented that everybody is here, so there's no... We're good.
Good job. Please continue.
Thank you, sir. So the Mobility 2030 packet, as some of you noticed, was in your packet, the entire book, and it's time to update it. It is definitely, we did not adopt all sections that were in it, and it seems a little redundant that we're starting off with the one section that we did have adopted in there, but it is so outdated that we're going to take this whole document piece by piece. The thoroughfare plan here is our connectors. The red indicates the different hubs or critical intersections. Your green is your minor arterial. Your principal arterial is your orange. That being your TxDOT roads. And then your general collectors are shown in blue. As we mentioned before, we have different definitions for these items in our code of ordinances. So our code of ordinances recognizes principal arterial. This slide here just shows the definitions that are in the Mobility 2030 that I just mentioned. The minor arterial, principal arterial, and then collector. However, when you enter into our code of ordinances, we have two different sections that both define what different types of streets and collectors and arterials are. And we just wanted to point it out that there is some redundancy currently in the code as we go through and adopt or recommend approval of changes to Mobility 2030. We will also also be looking at the code changes as well. We'd like to adopt a definition only in one space, one place, and then refer back to that elsewhere in the code of ordinances. Our residential streets are 36 feet in width, back to back, with a minimum right-of-way of 60 feet. There are some places in the city where there are 50-foot right-of-ways, and those were typically sections that were approved when it was in the county, and it was annexed in that way. And there's, to date, I only know of one case where we had a 50-foot right-of-way that was approved, where we required an additional 10-foot on either side of utility easement to go back-to-back. So in essence, we have effectively 70-foot of right-of-way. It's just that first 10 on either side belongs in the parcel versus completely with the city. There are some different variations for your residential streets. Here, where there are entrances, they have to go back for 100 feet and be a 70-foot right-of-way. That allows for some of that turning movement and stacking to occur as you're going through, coming out of your residential subdivisions. Now, our code of ordinance is different. You may remember that the Mobility 2030 had one definition for collector. Our codes have two definitions for collectors. We divide it up into minor and major, the minor being the 70-foot of right-of-way and 42-foot back-to-back curb, and then our major collector being a 48-foot back-to-back curb within an 80-foot right-of-way. As we're going through, because our adopted thoroughfare plan was adopted as part of 2030, it only references one type of collector. Here's where we have the connectivity isn't there between the definitions. And so when people come in, the primary difference besides the right-of-way width is the fact that you cannot put driveways for residential homes on major collectors, but you can on minor. But because our thoroughfare plan doesn't define those two different classifications, developers have been coming in and they've requested that it be classified as a minor, and so some driveways have been allowed due to this oversight in our code, between our code and our master plan for our thoroughfare plan. And so that is one of the items that staff would like you to consider and to look at and to possibly adjust, is how do we want to handle that? Do we want these collectors to be such that we don't have all these entrances located on them, that we have the backs of homes on them? Another differentiation between the thoroughfare plan within the 2030 document and our code of ordinances is the definition of arterials. Arterials in our code varies between 60 foot to 80 foot back to back within a 90 foot to 120 foot right of way section. However, in the adopted thoroughfare plan, there are two different classifications for arterials: minor arterial and major arterial. And one of those requiring the 120 foot and the other one the smaller. And so how do we want to address that? Do we want all of our arterials to all be the same type of classification and get rid of that extra minor arterial type of classification? Or do we want to clearly define both in our code and our thoroughfare plan? Basically seeking direction from you all on how you think we should proceed. If we should offer more options for different types of street sections, and if we do that, where in the city do you want those to be? So K-Tempo is our primary document that we look at when we're looking at the region. This is the definitions that we have to go by when we apply for funding. All, not just us, but all of the entities within K-Tempo, that is what they are looking at. And so you can see here, their principal arterial is classified as a major arterial, and it's 130 foot wide. That is larger than what we have here within our codes at the 120 foot. You also see where they have some green space separation between the travel lanes and the sidewalks or multi-use paths. So they consider a major arterial to have at least a pedestrian on one side and some type of multimodal on the other. So you're looking at a sidewalk that's big enough for bikes to come through, people to use it with other types of strollers and whatnot. And you also have a raised median in the center. In some instances, in some of the documentation for definitions, they have that raised median could also be vegetated and to break up that particular line, so not everything is paved. There is a minor arterial classification in our regional document, and that is the 110-foot right-of-way typical. So if you compare this to our lower end for arterial is 90-foot. Their lower end for arterial is 110. So a little bit of difference there. This is where you see the continuous left turn lane down the center. These are the types of sections. You can see that the pedestrian and multimodal are similar in nature. However, the spacing between the pavement and your pedestrian ways is smaller. On one side, it's only 3 foot in order to fit within that 110. So their collector classifications are all over the place. where we have two definitions and our thoroughfare plan has one definition for collector, you can see here that there are 6 different definitions for types of collectors. So this allows from your right-of-way of 80-foot, similar to what we have, going down to 70-foot, and different types of cross-sections, what that may look like. Local street, which would be our residential roads, they allow down to a 50-foot section. You see the 50-foot section in those cities and municipalities and areas where they don't allow parking on the road. That tends to be where you have the smaller sections of roadways. There's not as much clearance. In their example here, they show that it is wide enough to have an unofficial bicycle travel. That's not... when it's not marked on the pavement, I will say that that is a safety concern when you don't have a dedicated lane for them. So I'm not sure that that's something that staff necessarily would recommend. Your local residential streets for us is the 60-foot right-of-way. And again, that's because we allow the parking in the streets. And I'm going to have Yvonne talk about what One Passes offers.
Like horses and wagons or what?
Yeah. Bring them on down to the avenue. So as you can see in your packet, this sheet was also in there. Lynn Passes really just kind of generally defined their urban streets. They didn't put any required right-of-way in there with. It is in their code, but it was not included in their thorough plan that I found. Suburban streets, I would imagine that this is probably going to be similar to our residential streets that we have here. So we pulled this information in to try and get a general idea of the major cities that are also in the region to see what they had defined and used for their street requirements. Rural streets, we won't have very many of these here. The majority of our streets are in residential or, as Katrina said, like in the city limits that are going to be collected by vehicles. Street classifications, local streets have a minimum right-of-way of 50 feet. Secondary streets or feeder streets have a minimum right-of-way of 60, and major streets shall be determined by Planning and Zoning Commission with up to a maximum of 150 feet. So just very general, they only have 3 classifications of streets, it looks like, very general information on that one. And then moving a little bit further to the east, City of Copper Cove. This information is also included in your packet. Minor arterials. They move large volumes of traffic. Doesn't look like there's a right-of-way width or general width included on this one. Collectors. These streets just connect neighborhoods to the arterials across the city. Local streets. Lowest vehicle volumes, but also constitute most of the network by volume, mileage. The majority of the streets in the city are considered local streets, but they do have a lower vehicle volume. And then this is a classification, I believe that we've seen it down, to show the required miles per hour right away with grading for each, I apologize, type of street. So it looks like they have major arterial, minor arterial, major collector, minor collector, major local, and minor local rural. With the appropriate right of ways and minimum street width for each one of those. And then City of Plains is a little bit more thorough. Principal arterials are 120 foot right of way, 100 foot back curb. Collectors, commercial collector, police collector, and residential collector. So Colleen has three different standards for their collector streets depending on what they have. 70 foot right of way for the commercial collector and residential collector, and 80 foot right of way for the mixed use collector. Marginal access, 90 foot right of way with a 58 back of curb. Lower speeds and few intersections on these roads. And then local streets, which would be comparable to what we call residential streets for the city of Parker Heights. 60 foot right of way with a 36 foot back of curb. And then the description here does show a parking or bike lane on theirs with the 5 foot sidewalk on either side. Temple, they have three types of highway, major arterial, minor arterial, community collector, neighborhood collector, and local street. And then the diagram will just show you what the intent of each one is increasing mobility or increasing access. Urban streets, probably what we would consider residential for the city of Parker Heights. They don't have the right-of-ways on here, but they do have a diagram at the end that shows all of their streets with the required right-of-way and back of curb.
So your urban street elements are also going to be your commercial sections. So it may not necessarily be a larger road, it may be a smaller road that...
Suburban streets, I apologize. This is probably what we would consider residential here in the city of Parker Heights. Local streets for some of the other cities as well. It shows on-street parking, which the majority of our residential streets do have sidewalks, frontage zone, travel lanes.
How wide is that sidewalk? It looks pretty
not
wide.
It doesn't look to scale.
That theirs are all not to scale. They are like us, and they have a wide range of sidewalks depending on the type of street and the location, so what it's connecting to. So they have anywhere from your 5 foot to your 12 foot sections.
Well, if there weren't any people in it, I would think it's another lane, like an like express lane.
To the Vespa lane.
Rural streets, as we mentioned before, we won't have very many here that would even be considered rural streets. Some of them probably out by the lake, yeah, out south. Still have like rotors, Comanche Gap, that general area. And then this is the graph that Simple had to show the type of street, the function, their mobility, right of way, how many lanes, and back of curb. And if they require sidewalks, the width of sidewalks, if it's on both sides or one side. So eventually this is what we would like to have for the city of Parker Heights, a general graph like this to indicate the type of streets, the name of streets, and then the requirements for each subsection.
Well, let's make that happen.
And then just a continuation of the same graph.
So the next steps, we'll just briefly cover it now. We've left a couple of workshops. workshops for us to discuss this as well as a meeting. We can add more. This is a very fluid schedule set by law. However much you want to discuss it, how long we want to take to get to it. As a reminder, this will also tie to the next topic of the hike and bikes and the codes that go with that. It does say joint workshops because what we want to do would be also meet with the Parks Committee to make sure that we have the same vision going forward and our presentation would then be uniform to the City Council of recommendation. So that's in our future. So these are just some rough dates. Like I said, something to work for. Give us some guidance. I did leave us some room in the summer months because I know that looking back, we've had a lot of travel. Not everybody's here, and I know everybody wants to be active in this. And with that, I know we've thrown a lot at you, but we wanted to start somewhere. And so what it comes down to is we start defining what those classifications are, and then we go back and we look at the map and say, okay, this is where we would like to do it. This is where we would like to see some change in what we're doing. So with that, I'll kind of turn it back over to Larry and you all and see where we want to start our discussion.
First, I want to recognize my younger brother signed this back in 2014 when my younger brother was mayor. All right? So it's very important there. I think that the roads and everything, you know, we talked about this hike and bike thing for years now. You know, where we've had a little lane going and all that. And I don't think it really, do we have it anywhere in Harker Heights right now? Any bike lane or any?
There's nothing striped for bikes.
Yeah, I don't think there's.
In front of the community park, there used to be a bike lane right there when they first started doing the sidewalk.
On 2410? Mm-hmm.
There was a sidewalk on the north side of 2410.
Right.
And it's grown over or broken up now.
Right.
But it was concrete.
Yep. Never used to have stuff.
I don't remember the paint.
For bikes.
See, but I know we talked about it, and people, you know, they ride their bikes. I'm not.
I don't remember seeing it. That doesn't mean it wasn't there.
I mean,
because I haven't been around as long as some of y'all in the area, so I can look back on that.
It seems like there was, but like you drive into Killeen, there are certain areas where they've got the bike lane thing going. It seems like more and more all the time. But
honestly, for me, when I never noticed those bikes. They seem like
I wouldn't ride a bike right there.
Yeah, the ones on the street.
I wouldn't ride a bike right there. Yeah.
If you go down Rose.
Like she said, when I've already driven over there.
You go down Champs in the mornings over there, and they use them as parking lanes to drop their kids off at school.
Yep.
Yeah, there is one right there.
Yeah.
That's a good example.
Yeah.
Some other considerations.
The wide road. Yeah.
Some other considerations would be all of the paint, the striping, the signage, intersections, things that would have to be changed as we add. If we were to add bike lanes on the roads versus building wider sidewalks in certain areas that could be allowed for bikes to be on there as well.
There's no thing federally or whatever else we have to have.
Not right now.
Okay. Well, I'm all about sidewalks. Longer, wider, curvy, whatever. I'm down with sidewalks. I think that, but I don't see a lot of people riding bicycles on the sidewalks. I mean,
I've seen people riding on the sidewalks.
Ride them on the street.
Sure have.
Yeah.
Maybe by the line.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Like over there by the parking. Yeah, okay. So.
But I think most people that bike don't mind biking on the street. I mean, it's the same laws as driving your car.
Yeah, so I'm out there, man. I don't know how they, that little bitty seat. How do you do this? I can't. The seat is this big. I can't do it.
You're on the record.
That was Rob Robinson saying that. I'll try to calm him down.
So one of the things, then I'll go ahead and kind of get us focused on the roads. Why don't we start with local classification? With our local classification, while we do not promote the rural sections, we do have rural sections here in the city. It may be something that we want to define. That way definition of maintaining that in the future, what's to be expected. So they do have some roads that have what they call ribbon curves. So it's not the curve that stands up, it's the curve that lays flat in line with the pavement. And then they have bar ditch sections. A lot of those are also chip seal roads, so they don't look the same as what we would consider a local residential road. So we can add a definition in there for a rural local road or a rural road. To be, those are also our road right-of-ways that tend to be 50 or 60 foot, just depending on when they came into the city.
The rural roads, at one time, before Comanche Gap Road was fixed, was a rural road. I mean, it had just swales off to the side and so on. And now then we fixed it a number of years ago. But at one time, Indian Trail was exactly like that from New 190 down to 2410. And people don't remember, 2410 was like that at one time. It was two lanes. 2410 was two lanes, and then it took them years to replace, move the utilities. But I think there is a place for rural roads, particularly out east and then going up to High Oak and up in that area up on top.
There's Oak Ridge.
Yeah, or a Fuller Lane area too. Yeah. There's, and maybe even in some of the Comanche land, but some of that, we fixed a lot of the Comanche land over the years because that was dirt when we annexed it.
But the mobile homes, where the mobile homes are there turned into duplexes, that's pretty much the ribbon deal there. And that those roads are extremely near. So narrow there. That's you can't even park on that road. If we lived across the street from each other, he parked his car on the street. I parked mine here. God forbid a truck came through here. There's no room. Ramblewood, Maplewood,
Wildwood,
all up there. So we got to make sure in the future we don't make the mistake we have there, because that is just, there's no room there. A fire truck can't. I don't think a fire truck can get through there. And then people can't park in the grass. You know, if they get, you know, a little bit, he wants to get a little bit his yard, he can't do that legally. I think we should have figured something differently on that, and we have to look at that in any future.
But the future, I drove by it today, and it may be on 2410, close to Ace Hardware or so on, but they have paved everything in the front yard. Not only in front of the driveway, they paved everything.
Ace Connell's old house.
Brand new concrete. I mean, it's nicely done if you like concrete, but zero grass. There were some duplexes built on Cardinal, and the way the parking was is they allowed cars, normally you got two garages and you can park two slots per duplex, usually one in the garage and then one on the parking. This one, cars can park on the side, so you have 90 degree, you could park 90 degrees like this, and then you have cars parked right in front of them.
Right.
I do not know how the city approved that, if they did.
Well, the concrete, you're allowed to have the entire front yard if you want to.
No, I don't think so. 50% was the rule.
Well, that's a business.
Of the whole block.
South End, there's one house there that's down, concrete all across almost the whole front side of it.
Right.
But
I was leading up to it, and then I'll be quiet. What I made a note here when you first, either you or Yvonne brought it up, parking on the road, that's what we're talking about. Has any consideration been given to not allowing that on at least certain levels of streets to reduce some of the issues he has? If you drive, I don't know the road, but sometimes there's always cars parked where you frequently go up Gazelle or Elk, because it's a T intersection, but they're parked blocking it.
Yeah,
it's frontier
on both sides of the road.
And then, but has anything been given to restricting parking on?
So you've asked a lot of different questions here.
I know. I'm sorry.
It's okay. So going back, we did not have requirements as far as the amount of coverage of concrete or parking area within a front yard prior to October of this year. October of this year, the percentages are limited. It's 50% in the front yard area beyond what the required parking is for the house. So it's still a significant portion that can be paved over. The examples that you all gave were way before permitted, before installed, before that regulation came in. But the new regulation is such that It's not as much, but there's still a lot that can be.
So people are doing some of this to get ahead of the regulation.
Well, they're already approved.
So
in the prior.
There was a year lag between enforcement and when we were able to enforce it and when they adopted it, because they adopted it with a lag to hopefully get people into compliance before that. So there's that item on the history. The second is any time that we restrict or prohibit parking on a road, it has to be approved by city council, street by street, section by section. So that is why there is a running tab. If you look in our code of ordinances at the very bottom, it's all of the different roads where parking is limited that PD has brought forth to city council. And so that usually is along our collector roads, along our arterials, be they minor or major. And so those are the areas where we have no parking, because the primary intent for those types of roads are passage. It's to get passage. And the primary intent for the local residential is for people to have access to their homes and access to a bigger road. So yes, there is some concern with the smaller roads, and that's why in the past we have not allowed a smaller section of road other than what we have, the 36-foot back-to-back within the 60-foot right-of-way. If we did a rural section, I would recommend that we consider it still remaining that 60-foot right-of-way, but allow for the ribbon curb for those areas that maybe have a more rural setting. If you'll remember in the land use plan, we adopted the residential estates, so those are your half acre and larger lots. Maybe it coincides with those types of developments or larger. Mm-hmm. And we can write that into code, but we have to have a starting point somewhere.
If we do that there, are we able to also implement as far as areas that don't have sidewalks to put in there that require a sidewalk to go in within a certain time frame or something like that? Or is that
so sidewalks are required as they're coming in now?
I'm talking about old neighborhoods.
Old
is that something comes up?
As they redevelop, if it redeveloped as a commercial, then they would be required to put it in. But as far as tearing down a single family home and putting up a duplex, it'll be a sidewalk to nowhere. And so the city typically has those on its sidewalk plan to put those back in.
Okay, cool. The property he brought up on Elk and Gazelle, I believe, is the actual address.
Yeah, where that T intersection, Frontier.
No, not Frontier. Maybe this. Well, we gave him, what is it?
Elk and Lama.
Yeah, Elk and Lama.
Okay, that up there.
We gave him a circle driveway to park some more in there, but then he still parked more out here at the street. So
and I'm not going to talk about a pending legal case. So with that, I will say that is a local residential. And those wouldn't necessarily be collectors because it's not a primary where everybody is coming out.
But still, it's one of those things, if you live in a neighborhood, you don't want to have, in fact, a lady earlier today, elderly widow lady, a good client of mine I've had for years, the neighbor next door is parking vehicles right next to her driveway where she's old, getting in and out of her driveway. There's a line of cars there. She doesn't know who they belong to or anything else. And I think the deal about parking on the road there, that we should look at something like that.
I think it's hard to do that. If you can't park on the grass and you can't park on the road, and you have, you know, three teenagers living at home and two people, you know.
I know a pretty good concrete guy.
And that's the other side, because the older parts of town, they have one-car garages, because that was the state of the art then. You had one car. Now people have a minimum of five. I mean, all of us drive around. Four. And that's just a fact of life that we have to adjust with. And so that's
kids aren't leaving home these days. They're staying. They've figured it out. They get free room and board if they stay home.
There is some ordinance about parking close to a stop sign, though, isn't there?
Yeah,
there is. Parking close to, within the distance of the stop sign. There is also now, because of some of the driveway issues we had, which is part of this discussion in regards to thoroughfare, is we have ordinances that do not allow within 50 foot. You have to have 50 foot clearance for side triangle visibility to minimum separation.
Well, it's 50. I thought it used to be 100.
Let me rephrase that. For local residential, it is 50 foot. If it's on a corner, it's 50 foot. There are some conflicting portions of code that say others.
I thought it was 35.
Down to 30.
Yeah, I thought it was 35
down to 30.
Feet.
And there's others that say 50. When you start looking at it, the 50 is what is supposed to be gone by because it's the most restrictive and it covers the intersections. So your driveway intersections, your clearance where roads cross. The exception being if it has a higher speed limit than a local residential street, then your ASHTO requirements kick in. And so for some of those corners, especially around TxDOT corners, it could be up to 150 feet. 200 is the most I've seen, depending on line of sight.
But if it's 50 foot, I'm getting in the weeds here, but they did a duplex. They tore down a house and built a duplex there on Beeline. Nicely done. And yet, Beeline is east-west. The north-south, I don't know if it's Ann or Amy.
Harley. Well, it could be further.
But it's, the driveway is much less than 50 foot. The duplex, two lanes coming in, is much less than 50 foot from the intersection. There's a nice tree there. I mean.
So I can't.
I know.
Talk about a certain case. I don't have the history on that. I am saying that the way we practice it now and the way it reads now, currently in code, it is the 50 foot.
Are you telling me you want me to turn off the electronic?
No, sir, not at all.
I'll turn it back in a minute.
Not at all. But we do have those, and it is a learning curve. It is a practice curve. As people come in, there are lots of different codes to try to look at and to enforce, and we're all human. Sometimes stuff gets missed and overlooked because you're looking at a bigger picture. But now we do have measures in place with multiple people reviewing all on the same page. So that's kind of what we're looking at is, okay, let's start back to this local road. Are we wanting to add a rural section for some of that development that's going to occur out to the east? To allow for the non-curb and gutter?
I think we'd have to, yeah.
Because we had that one case came through with that right off 2410 goes down, and it isn't a place that you really think about seeing sidewalks and handrails and, you know, and those. I think it needs to be identified for those type of neighborhoods that are the bigger, larger lots, that otherwise they all have to do it exactly the same as in code.
What was the width again on the rural that you were looking at? I'm sorry.
So I was suggesting a 60-foot right-of-way and still keep the width section the same. That way it would allow for parking along those sections should they so choose. And so it would have the ribbon curb, so it would be 36-foot back-to-back, but with the ribbon curb, not the curb and curb.
And we're looking at mainly new construction here. Not if we annex some neighborhoods and like that to have them be compliant.
Right. So
we're only looking at new construction, right? We're not. No one's going to be going changing a road based on this particular thoroughfare plan.
No.
Only well, the bike, new, the only, bike deal maybe.
The only changes may be in our capital improvement plan as we're coming through, and we have where we're going to upgrade this local road to a collector or a minor arterial. Then we would look at it as a city for that capital improvement plan.
What's the Lake Road considered going out to Fuller? Is that rural? Or was that considered 3481?
Still House Lake Road?
Yeah.
It's a TxDOT road, so it's going to be...
Because it has those curves you were talking about.
A ribbon?
Yeah, it has a ribbon.
So on Fuller, I believe...
No, not
to an extent.
Still House Lake Road.
Yeah, I don't know. What's the real name of that?
Still House Lake Road.
Like to go to the bridge?
Yes.
Yeah, Still House Lake Road. FM
3041. But you gotta say Long Bridge.
Long Bridge.
Even though it's the only bridge.
Right here?
Yes.
What's that road considered? What is that?
It's a principal.
So that's a principal arterial, and that road is controlled by TxDOT. It was an old county road. And so now they've been updating all of our roads that are in our city. So they are the ones that control any type of upgrade there.
So that's what I was asking.
Well, just to compare it.
But then it's got the ribbon curves. Yep. So I couldn't tell.
Yeah. But so that would be a rural type section is what we would consider that because it doesn't have the proper curves. But it is classified as an arterial.
Yeah. But TxDOT has worked with the city. The city, there were some issues with the Fuller Lane intersection there, and they finally widened that so you could have a passing lane or a turn protected or at least designated.
So I-14 would just be considered interstate, or would
interstate,
that?
Interstate, yeah.
No other.
It's considered a principal arterial.
Oh.
arterial, according to us.
Okay.
So I-14, Stillhouse Lake Road, VMB, I'm trying to think of what else, 2410, those all have the same classifications. Your Indian Trail, Verna Lee, Warriors Path would all be considered minor arterials. For us, all of those roads I just mentioned in both categories would be considered an arterial. Right now, our codes treat them all the same.
He just mentioned Roy Reynolds here, which Harker Heights is on the one side, Clean's on the other side. But I think that's a clean road. I don't think it's Harker Heights at all.
Part of it is Harker Heights along there. Our city limits zigzags with Clean's.
Yeah, yeah, but I don't think
the gutter on our side is the border.
So it is in different locations through there. That's one of the reasons why we take care of the bridge.
But the road there,
pull that up in order to speak exactly to where that line boundary is.
Are you able to park on that road there?
No.
Okay.
Because that is considered a collector.
Yeah.
You are not supposed to park on the street.
All right. That was my only question.
Yeah.
What was she saying?
I said, I did not used to do that.
I still park there occasionally, but I put my hazards on.
You're waiting to get rear-ended.
Right? Yeah.
What bridge were you talking about?
The one there on Roy Reynolds over Nolan Creek.
Morris Crossing.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yep.
Right north of OAR.
Okay.
So are all those minor arterials, or are they all the same size now?
No.
Or is that,
no.
I don't think they are, right?
No.
They are not.
No.
So what it is when we classify a road as a certain type of arterial or certain type of classification, as plats occur, that's when we go through and acquire the right-of-way for it. A lot of times what we see is that a road will start as a two-lane road, and then as development occurs, as the city grows, then we add lanes to it.
Right.
Or add sections. In some cases, you'll see in some municipalities, they're downsizing roads because they're trying to encourage a slower speed, they're trying to encourage more greenery.
Put those curves in there and stuff.
So after all this discussion, are we trying to define what we want an arterial to be?
Yes. So
the width, the right-of-way?
For all of these classifications.
For all of
it. So
okay, I'm ready
starting
to do
with
that.
Your rural road.
I'm ready.
Okay. So why don't we start on the low end and work up?
Yeah.
Okay.
So are we looking at a rural road section?
Yes.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. And I heard a 60-foot right-of-way?
Correct.
And 36-foot for a total width to include ribbon curb?
Correct.
Okay. And then this would also allow for the bar ditch for stormwater runoff.
Which was much needed last night. There's still water in all of them right here.
14 needed it.
And then looking then at our local roads, do we want to leave it as one classification, or do we want to break it up into two? So a local road with commercial, a local road without commercial. For example, Miller's Crossing would be a local road commercial, possibly.
Okay.
Because it has commercial along it, it's not a collector. It also goes through and connects different types of commercial sections on the other side of 2410 on the west side. So do we want to treat them any different, or do we want them to have the same look?
What's the advantage? I mean, what's...
So I think Temple was the only one that had the difference between them.
I can't think of many areas where there was B.
I think to keep it consistent so it's not confusing.
Yeah.
So it would be, like I said, the Miller's Crossing area over here on the other side is one. If you had
the Walmart
Walmart connection areas back through there, You also have over off of Indian Trail where you have a couple different roads that, that branch off and have commercial on either side.
Well, like South End.
Yeah.
What's the name of the road that
South
runs by
Black Rifle?
I call it Hawksworth Way, but the one that's right by Black Rifle?
I call that accident waiting to happen.
Yeah.
That is so skinny. And
I can't say what I call it on
the Knox City Road. Yeah, the private road.
Wait till that hotel traffic gets going.
I know.
Oh, man.
With the hotel and
stuff. So that road is a private road, which is a whole other classification that we don't really get into. But that one, they are required to drop it to 20 miles an hour, just so you know, upon completion of development. They will be required to...
We can only go 20 down that road?
Well, how do you get up to 20 down the road?
Oh, that's a private road.
It's like that long.
Private road.
Police force can't monitor that road. Nope. They can't give you a ticket on the road.
It's
a good thing to note there. That was Josh McCann telling us the ways to avoid the police.
Hey, we already admitted to flying right over the bike lanes. So.
I don't understand why it's private road.
Because they never dedicated it to the city and they retained ownership of it.
So it's similar to...
Because it would have had to been a lot wider than what it is. Yeah.
Sorry?
The road behind Taco Bell is another...
It is a private access road as well. And so in Killeen, on their codes in here, they label that as a marginal access road. So they, even though it was private in nature, it was still classified as a marginal access.
Then who maintains it if it's private?
Who's they?
The property owners.
I've never seen anybody
else. You all know, obviously, that's through the GIS. You all would know who that is.
Yes.
I mean, if the road collapsed or if the...
It's generally attached to the properties that it butt to it. And those people, I mean, like on Taco Bell, it's the halfway point for all the owners over there, O'Reilly's, Duncan, et cetera. So it's the owners that abut to the property.
So when they come through at platting, there's an easement that is recorded with it to show that it is a private access road. And then those owners, in that particular document, it says that they are responsible for the maintenance of that particular road. And they have the right of ingress, egress, as well as city has the right to ingress, egress for city services, such as police, fire, and garbage.
But they could close it off if they chose to?
It, as long as we still have access for police, fire, and garbage.
But on the other side, right on the other side of like Popeyes and so on, that is also a road where you can... turn by the Whataburger, and then you go up past Popeyes, the auto repair place, and up to Starbucks, and then the auto repair place put speed bumps in right there to slow down the traffic, because most of the traffic's going both ways to Starbucks and Black Rifle.
Yes, so that is also a private road.
Right. Mm-hmm. So they can do that with no interference from the city.
Yes.
Okay. One last private road question. If you go the new development over there on Nola Ruth and Old Nolaville Road, you know, all fill that whole area up there. If you drive in there back to the pump station back there, the people there put up this fence, and I guess Parker Ice has a clicker to get in.
Yes.
So
that's oftentimes when you have a private access or a private easement, it depends on what type it is. There are different types of private access easements.
Right.
So in the case where it was for one or two properties and maybe the access is only for the city to get back to a lift station, they have to provide the city with a clicker or a daisy chain lock where we would have keys to one of the locks in order to get in and out. They cannot prohibit us to have access. Now, in some cases, TxDOT requires a marginal access across the front of a property. And so if that's the case for ingress, egress to 2410 or whatever other TxDOT road it is, they could not block those off because it's for the intent of whatever that public access easement is. But if they're just putting it in to have extra and they all have connection into 2410 or whatever other road and they're just having it as cross access between them, then at that point in time they could block that off.
Okay. Please continue.
There are a lot of ifs and thens and special cases when it comes to those types of activities. But we already talked about rural roads, so now we're talking about the local roads and if we wanted to have more than one classification. here, it looks like, who is this? This is Copper's Cove. The primary difference is the amount of parking lanes. So your local road in an urban setting, you could adopt a code that says that you could not have parking there in that commercial type setting along an urban road or a local road. But if it was a regular local road, so through your subdivision, then you're required to have the parking lanes, or you are able to park.
What do you think, Robbie?
I was going to, before you got in the, I think things have worked pretty well in Harker Heights, and I appreciate what you said, that you know, we need to go ahead and move on. But I think we've got a good base to work from. I'm not sure we need to, quote, reinvent the wheel. But I wanted to ask one question. All those maps, what is considered a decent drive width lane? Because you've been on some where you think you're going to bump the car next to you, even though you're not. But I see this one's 11 feet, but some of the others had 12 feet. And then whatever it is, then you have still some feet in between. Is there a good, safe recommendation for?
So the engineering standards typically deal with the speed that you're going. So the speed of the road controls the width of the lane. So as you're looking in a residential area, you tend to look at a smaller section or a smaller lane.
Okay.
Than you would if you were going at a higher speed. A higher speed, you're figuring that most drivers are going to have some bit of sway, and it's a little harder to judge distances, so you tend for the wider lanes.
Do our roads in the main meet that already?
Right, so most of ours are the 36-foot back-to-back, and so you know, you're looking at 2 foot of curb and gutter on each side, so that's 32 divided by 2. You have some pretty 15. Wide.
Okay,
wide
so
sections.
We're good then on a lot of what our planning has already accomplished.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So
we're trying to protect the future.
Right. Ours allows for a little bit of extra width in order to provide for those parked cars that may be staggered along the roadway.
So as you're saying earlier, the wider it is, the chance of people going faster through there.
Yes.
And then it's also more area we're having to maintain. I mean, the wider the road is,
well,
you know.
At least you can have the bike lanes. That's one thing that Harker Heights has, is wide roads compared to Austin. You know, and they got bike lanes, all those little skinny roads. But it is mandatory that you stay, if you're driving a car, that if you're on a bicycle, I got to stay 3 feet away from you. The thing is, we got some wide roads. But you take like Indian Trail, you know, as wide as that thing is, and then the last major project of putting up those mailboxes.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. Just, the Hawksworth Memorial mailboxes. That's
that
what
was
the Mark Hyde mailboxes.
Yeah.
Over half of them are taken down.
Did you get that?
But to make it more people friendly, it's nice to have the bike lanes and the walking lanes. But like going down Comanche Gap, there's people that they ride, you know, it's got a 5 foot sidewalk on one side, and people run up and down that. But as well as they ride their bikes on it as well.
Hmm.
You know, because it's really, there's just gives enough room for cars and trucks to go by each other.
Good point.
Now, my question is that going to grow? Because everybody on the weekends and stuff takes their mountain bikes down at the end of Comanche Gap, and because they got that mountain, you know, bike trail down there at the end. And they park their cars all up and down the road, you know.
Sometimes it's full. It's got 15, 20 cars there.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, about this at parking
cars went all the way back to 2410.
Yes.
And it was a party all the way there and back until the sheriffs came through. Because you weren't in Harker Heights then.
So, can I ask that we get back to the road?
Yes, go ahead, young lady.
Yeah, because
road.
Otherwise we're going to keep going down these rabbit trails and we're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah.
So I still.
I'm sorry. I'm
input from you all, consensus. What do you all want? Or what would you.
I think that we need to, in my opinion, match it to code, like to get the two talking to each other, but keep it as simple as possible. I think we've done a really great job in the past, thanks to our predecessors.
Fewer moving parts. Yeah.
So local road, keep it as is, and then just make sure that it matches the description that's in our thoroughfare plan.
My suggestion.
Yeah, sounds good. I like it. Good job, Nellie.
Moving on to collectors. Collectors, our code has the two different definitions for minor and major collectors, and our thoroughfare plan only has one. So the question becomes, what do we want to do with our collectors? So here, as a reminder, the minor collectors are 42 feet wide, minimum 70 foot right away. And this one, a minor collector allows for residential lots to front and have driveways onto it. You're looking at the definition of major collector, it's 48 feet wide, minimum of 80 foot right away. And does not allow for the driveway access for residential homes in front on. So do we want to keep the two different classifications, or do we want to combine it into one?
Well, again, if you do both of, keep both of them, you have more flexibility for the city council or the D&D to work with that.
So if we keep both of them, then we have to amend our thoroughfare plan map to distinguish which ones are which areas do we envision to be.
So right now, it doesn't have.
So if we were to look at the map, we don't have designations on the map as far as which street is minor and which is a major.
Correct. It's all just.
Do we have an idea? I mean, do we have. Somebody's had to have done something.
Going back to what Barry said on some of this, we're not a growing town. I mean, we're landlocked already. And the one map, for several in here, there's only very few proposed roads to be built in Harker Heights, and it's mainly along 2410 and the hill area. There's one or two others, but we may be straining at things we don't need to strain at, because the few roads we have to prepare for growth, because they will fill in.
So on the map, the thoroughfare plan map that's in the Mobility 2030, several of those proposed roads in there have been constructed, and they did not look at the ETJ area in detail. And so we're already seeing subdivisions coming in, and because we don't have any collectors identified out there, nobody is wanting to construct them. They're not including them in their proposals either, because we don't show an approximate area of where we envision a collector being needed.
Wow. Okay, then we need to do that.
What I'd like to do is first focus on these definitions, and then the next workshop will get to that.
You would need both the classifications.
Because there are certain areas that you don't want the front of the house being there.
Yeah.
Just safety. Because
I'm thinking of a collector like Old Nolanville Road. Mm-hmm. And, you know.
Those houses.
Now, I know on one side of it, you know, you can have residential or whatever, but. Some of those roads, I don't think you would want.
Have you ever tried to back out one of those driveways, though?
Yeah, I don't think you would want to have residential access off of some of these collectors.
Right.
Amy and Ann, aren't those collectors? And Harley?
Yes.
Yeah, and all those have both driveways, right?
Yep.
So we don't want to restrict that type of
in the future?
Road in the future.
Right, but I'm saying we have to have both of the classifications.
I think we have to have both, too.
So depending on the area of what's going to be developed there, if we needed a major or a minor.
More flexibility.
And we have both now, or we just have one?
We
haven't labeled it.
We have the definition.
Hold on, let her say it.
We have two definitions for a major and minor collector in our code of ordinances, but on our thoroughfare plan map, it is only one. So what we can do is, if the consensus is we want to keep both definitions, then I'll mark it down for our next meeting to go through and look at where on the map are we going to place these two designations.
Well, as Stegmaier said, we need to do that to make it keep it flexible.
Okay.
So let's do it.
So we're going to move right along.
We're moving right along.
We have our major and minor arterials, and as you take can recall here, we have two different classifications for arterials on our thoroughfare plan map. However, in our code of ordinances, we only have one definition for arterial. And so if we want to expand that out and include two different ones, we can do that, a major and a minor arterial. Your minor arterials would be more of your city streets that have gone beyond just a regular celebrity level. There, those are the streets that you take to get from one side of the city to the other real quick, not just to exit your subdivision to get to a highway. Thoughts on that?
Ladies and gentlemen?
Well, if we kept it both on the other one, we might have to do it on this one.
Yeah, I-14 is not Indian Trail.
Yeah. Okay. So on the major, we saw a couple different classifications. K-Temple allows up to 130-foot right-of-way. Ours right now would allow up to 120-foot for a major arterial. Do we want to increase it to the regional standard of 130 for the major arterials? So the bigger of the two?
Okay, so
I think 120 is sufficient.
Yeah, I agree with 120.
Yeah, 130, that's more, again, more maintenance, more.
That's a right-of-way, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, but still.
But that's just the right-of-way. And also remember that on the major arterials, you don't have sidewalks. You may have bridges, turnarounds. You have drainage within that state right-of-way. Just some thoughts.
So what would...
And we're not maintaining it, it's TxDOT.
Oh, okay, good.
What would Warrior's Path be considered?
That would be a minor arterial.
Okay. Because that does have sidewalks and everything along it.
Yes. Ooh,
that's cool.
So I would think more along the lines of minor arterial is not City of Parker Heights maintained, major arterial is TxDOT maintained.
That's actually
like
a
that.
Good way to break
it
down.
Yeah,
so
say that is the definition.
More like 2410 expansion
right.
On out.
Yes. The main lanes of I-14.
Right. Okay. So I think you need both classifications.
Yeah. Okay. And so the question becomes, what do we want to set those right-of-way widths at? So while it is TxDOT maintained, we acquire the right-of-way for them at the time of platting. So half of whatever would be required would go on one side of the highway and the other as they're platted out. So 2410 would be the primary example. Most sections are about 115 foot of right-of-way right now. It doesn't quite meet the 120 requirement that we have. So as those plat going east, they would be required to give some right-of-way.
What does Clean have that?
Why don't they have a 110 Clean?
So K-Tempo had the 130, and TxDOT is a member of K-Tempo on that particular board. Copper's Cove says per TxDOT, and Lead has 120. And let's see what Temple has.
So
120.
Would be 120.
Yeah, 120 would be good.
I think 120 is good on the
main. Okay. 120 on
the major. It says the K-Tempo says desirable is 120.
Right.
So I think that's good.
Right.
Okay, and so then minor arterial is 100 feet for Temple for Killeen is 110.
Page 53.
Copper's Cove.
That's right here.
Read it. I can't read that.
Theirs is much smaller for a minor arterial. I will tell you that there are sections of Warrior's Path that are beyond 90 feet just to get the sidewalks and drainage in. I would recommend the 110.
I would think 110.
What's the K-Tempo recommendation? It seems like if we were following K-Tempo, it wouldn't be a bad idea if we're going to be asking them for grants and stuff like that, right?
There's
your point.
110. Okay, 110 minor. All right, well, that was the heavy lifting part. What we'll do is we'll go through and craft it and give you a strike-through version of the ordinance, and then the next time we can come forward and we will have the maps We'll go through and look and take a stab at it, and then you all can tell us if it's what you had in mind or if there are changes that need to be made.
Cool.
Anything else in regards to driveway access or these definitions for these roads?
I think everybody's good.
So
we will adjourn it.
Are we done?
Okay. Wait. Can I ask? This is a little off. I'm looking at the map, thoroughfare plan region on some of the proposed roads south of 2410.
Hey.
The proposed roads south of 2410. Is there anything been done on that, or are they just still... The little dotted circle right in the lower left, almost like a horse track, and then there's another one to the right that angles up northwest to southeast. Any status of those?
So when these particular maps were done, there was a little bit of consideration in regards to the topography and how items would connect. And so some of it was... We think there should be some type of connection here. In that particular instance, it's not going to look like that horseshoe anymore. There is not a way to economically get across the creek right there that parallels Comanche Gap. You would be talking millions of dollars for a very small bridge based off the amount of water that comes down through that area. And so that connection to Comanche Gap is no longer... being considered, and there is a connectivity. If that particular parcel ever develops, they do have to provide a collector that connects down. Some type of connector. It probably won't go like this. It's going to come around and come through this subdivision and then connect in.
But you had said a little while ago that the developers were resisting putting in collectors. They were trying to work their way around it or something.
So for these areas out here,
the new ones.
We don't have anything, or we have very little shown. So this here, there's actually a few hundred acres where development was going to come in, and this was all they were looking at, when in all actuality, based off of the number of units, there would need to be a few more collectors within that particular area.
What road is that's connected to?
It's like some hillbilly road.
Yeah. Is that up on that?
That's High Oak.
That's
up to High Oak area.
High Oak.
Up on top of that ridge.
You're going to connect High Oak down to 2410?
That was the envision on this.
Dang.
There has to be some type of connectivity for fire. So we're also looking at being able to get in and access. We have seen that they'll work through wherever the lower points are in order to get a road through. Some of the developers, it provides them additional access points as well. There's some give and take.
All right, is there anything else?
There's some big construction going on.
There is.
Somebody's not telling us.
All right, we're going to adjourn this at 6:46 p.m. Thank you all very much for coming tonight.
All the time, scared to death.